We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
And welcome to In the Know, the Hornets 24/7 podcast. Your knowledgeable hosts are Michael McNamara.
Me and a grizzly bear, I'm betting on me.
And me, Ryan Schwan.
I've been playing some Dungeons & Dragons because I'm really cool like that.
Let's get it started. All Hornets, all the time.
Welcome to the show. The Hornets, Saturday and Sunday, performed in a back-to-back, losing the first game, winning the second game, crushing the dreams of all Damian Lillard fans. Michael, did you enjoy our two-game weekend? Were you ecstatic to see the Hornets win a game, or were you sad, Michael?
I enjoyed the games, but yeah, if there was ever such a thing as a heartbreaking victory, I think that's got to become a new turn now. I mean, the Hornets played it just right to my formula that I love: get a big lead, blow it, and lose by a small margin at the end, therefore racking up more ping pong balls. It was all there, and then darn, Ryan Anderson had to go make a couple of great plays.
Yeah, I mean, Lillard had it in the bag. I mean, he drilled that 3-pointer again, and I gotta say, I mean, we're not supposed to be talking about this game yet because it's the second one, but Anthony Davis, he was there. He was so fast. I was expecting him to block that thing. I mean, it's unbelievable how long Anthony Davis is, and it's no surprise that he can block people on the perimeter.
Yeah, no, what I liked from that game specifically, we'll get to the Memphis one, but what I liked from that game is that on the final play of plays of the game, when the game was in doubt, the Hornets actually defended the correct rim. It's a huge step forward from what we saw against the Lakers just a few days before. So there's steps being made. I mean, a lot of people say it's a lost season, but there's obviously huge progress being made in just a week.
Well, you know, Brian Roberts, I mean, clearly he is the point guard of the future now.
Yeah, when he starts at guard, he's averaging, what, 9 assists a game?
9 assists and 0 turnovers.
Yeah, that would be better than Chris Paul. So what about the raw stats?
But, of course, before we even talk about the games, we should talk about the really big news. The Hornets are not mathematically eliminated from the playoffs. There's still a chance they can make the playoffs. And according to what I'm hearing in the news today, they're going to make a big, huge signing. And suddenly, you know, they're going to go on a, you know, 18-win winning streak, just like the Heat. And, of course, I'm talking about Lou Amundsen.
Yeah, and what I've seen on my Twitter feed is people were ecstatic just to hear you get to pronounce a new name. That was a little bit more difficult than Smith, but I think you let them down a bit because you actually pronounced it correctly. Very unschwan-like maneuver, Mike.
Should I have fumbled? Because at one point I was actually moderately interested in seeing him come to the Hornets. So I'll hear. Laois Amundsen.
Okay.
How do you even mess that name up? That's not that. Come on, really? That's like me mispronouncing Matthews. I can at least get that right.
Well, I'm happy for you. Yeah, another signing to take some of the minutes from Jason Smith. That might mean that we might have seen the last of Henry Sims, but. But yeah, Hornets still mathematically in the playoffs and started this week at Memphis. I guess I had one huge takeaway from this game, you know, moving forward. What kind of stood out to you in this first game?
That the Hornets don't have as much talent as Memphis. I mean... That game went exactly how you'd kind of expect it. They just wore the Hornets down, and the Hornets couldn't keep up with them as the game went on. I mean, their defense is so much better than what the Hornets have out there. And, I mean, I like seeing Anthony Davis put up a 20-18, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it just it's still mind-boggling how little we see Davis and Ryan Anderson together from my taste. I don't know if I could think of another team whose two best players, play so rarely together. I can't think of another team. I mean, to me, far and away, these are the two best players on the team. You could argue that Gordon will be in that conversation if and when he gets back to 100%. Monty and Dell said he's about 80% this week. So you could argue that in the future. But as of today, right now, this minute, and especially the way Davis is playing as of late, these are clearly the two best guys. When they're on the floor together, beautiful things just happen. The Hornets kind of ran a new play that I hadn't seen yet, where essentially Davis gets the ball at around the free throw line, does a handoff to Roberts. Anderson is standing right next to him, and as Roberts comes around, receiving that handoff, Davis rim runs, and Ryan Anderson pops out to three. The first time they did it, Davis had an easy alley-oop, beautiful dunk. The second time, Anderson got a wide-open three as the team kind of sunk down off of it. I mean, it's one of those plays that, especially when the Hornets get the right point guard on this team, is going to be absolutely unguardable. And it's so beautiful to watch. It's such beautiful basketball when Anderson and Davis are on the court. I'm just really, really frustrated that we don't get to see more of it.
Well, I mean, when you have the opportunity to play Robin Lopez big minutes instead of the two guys who are the foundation of your team for the next 4 years, 5 years at least, you got to take advantage of that.
Yeah, and I mean, when Lopez goes 1-for-5 in a game.
one offense, not a single defensive rebound in 22 minutes.
And you know what frustrates me is when Lopez puts up this dud, I saw some fans comment that, well, we got to cut him a break. He's playing one of the top two or three centers in the NBA, and I can't stand that. I constantly try to push this message on this podcast of, you measure yourself against the best. You know, it doesn't matter what you do against Detroit or Toronto or Sacramento. These are the only games that matter. So to me, I'm just not buying that. It's just, it's clear as day that Robin Lopez is maybe a 12 to 15 minute guy on a good playoff team. And I just want to see more of Davis and Anderson together. If I'm going to have to, you know, suffer through the rest of the season, where obviously, even though we're not mathematically eliminated, the playoffs are not a possibility, at least let me see those guys on the court together more.
Well, so here's the one stat I actually bothered to keep while I was watching this game. Marc Gasol took 11 shots. 10 of those shots he took when Robin Lopez was guarding him. And the reason why he took them was he was wide open each and every single time. As soon as Robin Lopez started guarding Marc Gasol, they started running plays for him. And as soon as he was being guarded by somebody much smaller but who would actually be able to get in front of him on a pick and roll, he stopped taking shots. He was passing. Now, that wasn't necessarily the best thing because he's a great passer, and he got 6 assists in the game. But it was no longer – he was catching a 12-foot jump shot wide open with nobody really – I mean, Lopez is just so slow-footed. There's nothing that he can do to get back to the guy. And all he has to do is – I mean, the most bizarre about it is Gasol has to take, like, 3 steps. Takes 3 steps, and that's all he needs to do to be secure that Lopez is not going to be able to get to him in time to stop him from shooting.
Yeah.
I mean, poor Lopez. I'm sorry, Lopez.
Yeah, hopefully he'll be in the role that's made for him next year or he'll be on another team. But if they're...
You know what would help? So we have this guy on our books who has, like, experience at doing things to help his performance. So I think Lopez should call Rashard Lewis.
Hmm.
Maybe Lewis's buddy Hito Turkoglu, and he can you know get a little help there, you know. Although there is news that the NBA should be testing for human growth steroids pretty soon. So maybe that's not the best idea.
Well,
but
I mean maybe it is if it gets Rhino and Anthony Davis on the court more. That'd be one that spike is Gatorade. No, I mean, again, it's not his fault. It's position he's put in, and, you know, this is the future. Anderson and Davis is the future. Monty, you know, if I had to be as optimistic and be as charitable to Monty as possible, I would say that, you know, with Davis still being as skinny as he is, he doesn't want him to take the pounding, but after another summer in the gym, you know, maybe next year Monty is willing to go full force with this Davis Anderson combo. But it's just so nice to see it together. I mean, it's such a lethal combination, especially when Davis is hitting down, you know, hitting his mid range jumper, which he was doing early in this game, but then you know was coming up a little short later. But you know, moved in towards the rim to get his points. I mean, to me, this was one of Davis's best games, but I just felt like there was a different energy and look in his eye. Like it really looks like he's starting to become confident and feel like he belongs out in the NBA. It's just something I can't quite explain. Just a feeling that I've gotten lately while I'm watching him.
Yeah. I don't know. He seems much more confident, and honestly, he's already probably one of the top 3 or 4 big men I've ever seen on a Hornets team going towards the basket on a pick and roll to finish. I mean, Tyson Chandler clearly was phenomenal at that. You go back a ways and you'll find other players. I mean, Larry Johnson clearly was amazing. Zoe, not so much. Zoe was more of a post-up presence. I'm trying to think of who else was... just a great dive man on a pick and roll. And already, I mean, Anthony Davis is like right near the top. I mean, the guy's just got so much touch around the basket. He knows he can catch almost anything. If he gets a little bit stronger, he's going to be a monster.
Yeah. And the place I don't see him utilized enough, and I saw him open maybe 5 or 6 times at least this week, is after a defensive rebound, just sprinting straight down the court and beating everybody down the floor. Yeah. With his hand wide up in the middle. But, you know, obviously we don't have a guard who could push the pace and get the ball to him there. But if we ever get a guard who could do that, he's going to get 6-8 points a game just off of running the floor.
Right. So just a little stat I'll throw out there so everybody can gnash their teeth and spit and be angry. Out of 3,092 minutes that the Hornets have played this year, Ryan Anderson and Anthony Davis have been together for 536 of them. Now, granted, 17 of those games, Davis wasn't available.
Right.
But still.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to do simple math. That's like 12-13%, right?
Yeah, a little more than that. Yeah, I would probably say there's probably about – he's probably playing about 20% of the minutes possible.
Well.
with Ryan Anderson.
Okay. So after that depressing news, my big takeaway from this game, I mean, I really feel like when the Hornets got back in this game, and this is funny because we'll see it later in the week, I feel like the Hornets got back in this game with Brian Roberts at point guard simply because, again, you put Vasquez against Mike Conley, and Mike Conley just forces him to one side of the court or the other, which completely shrinks the offense and his options within that offense. He couldn't do that to Brian Roberts, obviously, because Roberts is a little quicker. We saw a lot of Vasquez off the ball in this game when the Hornets kind of got back in it. When he got back on the ball, Conley just gave him nightmares. And I can't help but come away from this game just more solidified than ever, in my opinion, that there's just absolutely no way that Vasquez could be a dominant, ball dominant point guard for a really good team. If he's going to stay here, he's going to have to be off the ball.
Right. Well, I mean, Conley and Bayless, they're two primary point guards for most of the game. They weren't always, they did play like probably 5 minutes together, but they combined for 32 points on, essentially 12 of 24 shooting, 50% shooting. And they were having no trouble getting to the rack. It didn't matter. I mean, honestly, I'm not going to say it's all Vasquez's fault because Brian Roberts wasn't giving them much more difficulty. A little bit, not much more. But this team is a 29th ranked defense. It has no perimeter defense. I mean, I remember, when Chris Paul got injured that one year, we had Collison and Thornton on the team. I remember people just tearing apart David West and our interior players, because like Okafor in particular, because they were always fouling and getting in foul trouble, and they just couldn't stop anything coming in from the perimeter. It starts at the point of the attack, and it's the same thing now. I mean, these guys aren't having any resistance. They can go wherever they want to. So, and I mean, honestly, you know who I think has checked out in the last few weeks and isn't giving me what he was giving that made me want him to stick around? I don't think Al Farouk's been giving everything he's had for the past couple weeks.
Huh, that's interesting.
I mean, I think he's still rebounding at a good rate. Part of that's just his natural athleticism and instincts. But for a stretch, he was coming off of out of the corner, slashing. He wasn't super effective, but he was causing at least a little misdirection. I just feel like he's standing around a lot more than he had been.
Yeah, I was at the gym today, and I didn't really have any podcasts to listen to. Darn Bill Simmons and Grantland haven't put on any lately, so I'll admit it. I listened to one of our old ones, and it was the one right after the Boston game where the Hornets were on a winning streak, and it's crazy to go back and listen to that podcast because it was just about 2 months ago, and we were talking about playoffs as a possibility. This was right as, they just kept winning when Gordon came back. And in that game, I believe Al Farouk had something like 16 points and 12 rebounds. And,
he's a monster.
Yeah, we were talking about the energy that he had and the baseline cuts and how he was getting to the rim. And, now it seems like he's really only taking shots at the end of the shot clock or, if he gets the ball dumped down to him within 2 to 3 feet of the basket, which I'm fine with, but I don't know. We all talk about whether or not the Hornets should re-sign him. I don't know if that's going to be their decision. I get the feeling, and I'm kind of on board with you with this as far as him just checking out. I have the feeling he thinks he's capable of a lot more, and he's going to want to go somewhere that tells him he's a good offensive player, and they're going to showcase all those things where the Hornets clearly don't feel that he's capable of being an offensive threat.
Right. I mean, so if I were the Hornets, I would put a Jason Smith offer on the table and let him decide if that's what he can get. And I wouldn't even make it a priority. I'd tell him, we're going to look at a couple options early early in the free agent season. We're going to come to you probably with a deal, at this much, but we can't do it right now. We got to see what else we can do. And if he walks in that time, He walks.
Okay, yeah, I mean, I would feel the same way. I wouldn't.
And if we draft Otto Porter, see ya.
Yeah, I mean, I would definitely, I love your idea of having him as a combo forward off the bench that plays minutes at the 3 and 4 and just comes in and grabs a bunch of rebounds. But to me, I wouldn't be devastated if we lose that. It's not like that's the difference between a championship and not winning one. But from this game, I mean, this was the second time now we've seen Eric Gordon matched up against Tony Allen, and he just seems to defer and back off, knowing that Allen is going to give him everything he's got, and Gordon just seems more than happy to not touch the ball or just stand in the corner in offensive sets. I mean, to me, a true competitor would love a challenge like this and want to go after a guy like Tony Allen, but this is the second straight time now I've seen Gordon go up against Memphis, and he just, you know, doesn't seem to have any kind of desire to really push it against Tony Allen. He finishes this game with just 7 shots, was fairly efficient in those shots, but was, you know, again, your $58 million man is looking like a role player.
Yeah. I mean, what can I say? Eric Gordon looks checked out to me, too. But he's been checked out since the team went on the losing streak. I don't think Eric Gordon's been putting his all on the floor since it was clear that the Hornets were not going to be able to make a comeback. I mean, he has moments here and there, but I don't know. I don't even know if I'm going to count much of the rest of the season as what Eric Gordon could do. I don't like this at all. I mean, I'd rather he be like Roger Mason. When Roger Mason steps on the floor, he's going to give you everything he can. But then you got to also look at the kind of situations each of these guys are in. I mean, Eric Gordon is secure. He's got a $58 million contract. But Roger Mason isn't. He's got to work. And, I mean, we give Monty a lot of credit for what happened last year with that team, how that team always worked hard and it almost came back and ruined our lottery chances, and how he had all those guys always putting everything on the floor. But every single player on last year's team was playing for a contract or their NBA lives. There was only a couple guys there who weren't. I mean, like Carl Landry could be pretty sure that he was going to stay in the NBA, but he wasn't. I mean, he didn't get a good contract as a result of his play. Jarrett Jack had a secure thing, but he was shut down. I mean, all these guys that we had, you know, we gave him credit for motivating, they had a lot of motivational things to do. If you go and look at, like, Sacramento now, I believe last time we played them, I said that they looked like the least interested team in the league. There are going to be players on this team who will probably feel that way. And Eric Gordon would be the top of my list of people who feel that way. I don't know why Al Farouk feels that way. But he seems like he is. I don't know. I don't like it, but that's just the reality. When you're going nowhere and you know it, are you always going to give 100%?
I mean, so you say you feel like Eric Gordon's a little bit checked out. Monty has said that we shouldn't expect the real Eric Gordon until next year, that basically these injuries, the doctors have told him, it takes a player about a year to get back from. Dell Demps at a recent Chalk Talk said that Eric Gordon was about 80% right now. At what point is there just no purpose in him playing anymore this season, and would you advise shutting him down?
If Austin Rivers was not injured, I would shut his ass down now. Because he's not giving us anything that's helpful. He's not, but there's no one to develop behind him. I mean, shutting him down right now, so what, we give Roger Mason and Brian Roberts more minutes? These guys aren't developing players for the future. I mean, maybe you can argue you could give Darius Miller more minutes and see what he can continue to do with big minutes. But even, I mean, Zavi Henry's clearly out of the picture. He didn't play a minute. So shutting Eric Gordon down doesn't give us anything, and having him play at least allows you to say, well, he finished up the season, and maybe keep your fans, you know, I mean, the fangs are already out, but keep your fans from tearing the flesh off of Eric Gordon too much.
Tearing the Flesh Off of Eric Gordon. Don't make that the name of the podcast. It'll get plenty of clicks, but be a little disturbing. So you brought up Darius Miller. We saw him for 17 minutes in this game, or did we? I still don't know. I mean, his teammates all tell
him. Hey, he was plus +8, though.
Yeah, I mean, he must have done something. But his teammates all tell him to be more aggressive. He's very passive. I also felt like there was a couple times where the ball got swung around the perimeter, and it was just one pass away from going to him for a wide-open look, but our guys didn't make that extra pass. But really not much to say about him in this game, but just overall over the next 20, how much would you play him and what would you be looking for as you try to make your decision whether or not to bring him back next year?
Well, I would be playing him at least 20 minutes a game from now on. I mean, our options are players like Terrell Harris and Roger Mason. I mean, this team is really thin right now, especially in the wings and the backcourt. So, I mean, we're signing Lou Amundson. I'm not sure why we're doing that, because I want to see Anthony Davis play really big minutes. I want to see Ryan Anderson get time with Anthony Davis. And honestly, I don't mind seeing Darius Miller as a small power forward and seeing minutes for Lance Thomas. I've pretty much pigeonholed Lance Thomas as the player I think he's going to be and not going to change from, but is there any harm in giving him minutes to see what he can do and see if he can get into some sort of rhythm? At this point, this season's over. It's, for all intents and purposes, it's over, so we should be playing young players wherever we have them. In the case of Eric Gordon, we don't have anybody behind him who's young and who we would want to play anymore. So,
see, you ask those questions. I think there can be harm. We're going to move on to the Portland game.
Okay.
I specifically think that there was a stretch at the end of the third quarter in which Lance Thomas destroyed the tank. So there is harm in giving him a minute. I mean, maybe a guy like Lou Amundson could get back. I don't think that it's coincidence that he comes in the day after Lance Thomas has a good game and this tank is derailed a little bit.
You think they're like watching game for game?
Yeah, I mean, Lance Thomas is, I mean, he comes in and to me he completely changed that game at the end of the third quarter and probably cost the Hornets a quality loss here. So maybe that's the strategy for bringing in Lou, but no, I mean, it was a highly entertaining game. I thought the biggest part of the game by far was with Eric Gordon out on the second day of a back-to-back and obviously no Austin Rivers. I think we expected Roger Mason to start. But as I said, if you watch that Memphis game just the day before, Gravis Vasquez played the best off the ball. The Hornets offense had a lot better flow with Vasquez off the ball, so Monty not only starts Brian Roberts in this game, but basically put Roberts at the point and Vasquez in more of what you would call a shooting guard position.
Yep. And so Roberts racks up 9 assists. And now, first of all, it's 43 minutes. That's still worse than the average point guard in the league. 9 assists over 43 minutes. But, I mean, I'm going to murder Vasquez again, but Vasquez is averaging 9 assists a game, playing like 39 minutes a game. Clearly, if you run this particular Hornets offense and you are surrounded with people who can finish like Davis and Anderson and Roger Mason, you will get assists. Do I expect Brian Roberts to be a guy who's going to get 9 assists and 0 turnovers of a game? No. But, you know, you can get assists in this offense because when you're handling the ball. Did you think that Brian Roberts was way better than Vasquez at the point?
I wouldn't grade them individually against each other. I do feel like the offense has more options and fluidity. Like so if you watch Vasquez, it wouldn't have happened in this game because we already saw Vasquez go against Lillard, and Lillard isn't really a defensive point guard. But Batum, when they put Batum on Vasquez, all of a sudden the game changed. Right. And that's what they could have done for the entire
game. Vasquez was crushed right. by Batum.
But see, I mean, what happens with Vasquez, if you watch Vasquez against an above-average defensive point guard, what they do is they kind of push him to one side or the other. It's they'll push him to that little spot above the three-point line, kind of the wing three, but maybe 5-6 feet out, and Vasquez has to turn his back to the defender. And what it does is it basically cuts the court in half because he can't make that cross-court pass, where Roberts has the quickness to, you know, to kind of handle the ball at the top, middle, you know, above the three-point line, right in the middle, and that leaves all passing lanes and options open for him and kind of keeps the defense on his toes. So is Roberts better than Vasquez? No, but having Roberts on the ball allows the team to run, you know, a number of different sets that they just can't run with Vasquez, or, you know, can't run effectively with Vasquez at the helm. So I don't think he's a better player than Vasquez, but as a coach, I would love that he gives me more options than the slow-footed Vasquez.
Yeah. Yeah, so here's you mentioned Damian Lillard is not a very defensive-minded point guard. So first, I need to say this so that people hear it. I mean, I think Damian Lillard is a good point guard. I think he will probably be average or better than average his entire career as a point guard. And right now he's a very good offensive player. But the Damian Lillard I watched last night was perhaps one of the worst defensive point guards I've ever seen. And he just and it's not necessarily on the ball. He's okay on the ball. He still lets people pass him pretty easily, but he's at least trying. But when he was supposed to be help defending, the only thing he would do was swipe at the guy. And I don't even mean like he'd like reach out for the ball. He didn't take a step towards him. He would just kind of fling his arm at him, like, oh, like waving at them as they go by. And it happened time after time after time after the guy has no concept how to play NBA help defense at all right now. So, I mean, before we can start anointing him as another brand new awesome point guard, he's got to pick up a little bit of that. That said, you know, of course, I'd trade any guard on this team for him, but whatever. Roberts was penetrating more freely and has more change of direction than I think Vasquez does. When Vasquez, he basically hits his acceleration button, gets up to speed, and I notice I threw the acceleration word in there so we could talk about your other article later. Vasquez hits his acceleration button, gets up to speed, and he's going one direction. That's part of it, kind of feeds into the thing I said before where he locks in on one thing and his choice is shoot or pass to that one thing. And it's the same thing. His acceleration goes and he can go one direction. You will never see Vasquez stop and reverse or do any sort of nifty change of speed move after he's gotten to full speed. Roberts actually can do cutbacks and change the direction his dribble's going in. So he at least creates a little more havoc. He still takes way too many dumb shots.
Yeah.
But, I mean, if I had to have either of these guys at point guard, I would throw up my hands and expect a losing season.
You know what I think Vasquez reminds me of now that I've seen it? I don't know if you'll get this reference if you saw in this movie, but Vasquez reminds me of the bus from Little Miss Sunshine.
I've not seen Little Miss Sunshine. So please explain to me how he's a bus.
Okay, so in this movie,
I thought you were going for speed for a second.
So in this film, I guess the writer, it you know, it happened to him in his childhood. Or her, I honestly don't remember who wrote Little Miss Sunshine. But anyway, so in this film, the van, the bus, will not start until it gets into like second or third gear. So the whole family has to get out and push the van, and then
to get that speed.
Yeah, and to get it enough speed so then they could then jump into it and then start it up. This has to happen every time, so obviously they don't stop it that often. So to me, that's what Vasquez is. It takes so much to get him going and kind of running downhill that, yeah, there's not going to be much opportunity to change direction, and he's not going to stop to start up again because nobody wants to get out and push the van. So
that's pretty funny.
You do have to see the movie. It was a fantastic movie. I know the title probably is not that appealing to you, but give it a shot. It's got
isn't that with Danny DeVito?
No, it's got.
No. I'm thinking of Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Oh, no, it's got Steve Carell and Alan Arkin and the girl who's taken off. I don't remember her name. Greg Kinnear. It's got a really nice little indie cast. So give it a look. But yeah, just the van and Little Miss Sunshine. So, but. Yeah, I mean, Roberts just gives you more options. But that being said, can you imagine having a Swiss Army knife off the bench like Gravis Vasquez, who you could put in there at the 1, 2, or 3 and, you know, and really expect, again, if he's coming off the bench, yeah, a guy like Nick Batum could shut him down, but not that many teams have Nick Batums on the bench. I mean, you look at the Portland's bench in this game. You got Eric Maynard, Jared Jeffries, Will Barton, and Luke Babbitt. If Vasquez is coming off my bench, he murders any of those guys that I just mentioned. Right. So yeah. Again, it's all relative. I mean, you got a guy getting paid under $1.5 million. There's not many guys in the league, if any, giving you a better season for under $1.5 million than Gravis Vasquez. If you got him coming off the bench and can plug him in, you know, off the ball, on the ball, and spurts at 1, 2, and 3. You know, that would be invaluable.
And I would put money on if Vasquez was off the ball as a spot up shooter. I would put money on him shooting 40% for a season.
From
I think from three
overall.
From three.
Oh yeah.
I think he's a knockdown 3-point shooter when he catches it. And shoots. He's very good.
He's by far, I mean, it's not even close. He shoots almost twice the percentage that Ryan Anderson shoots. Okay, that was a bit of an exaggeration. Ryan Anderson shoots under 40% from three in the corners, and Vasquez is right around 60. He's 60 from one corner, and I believe he's 57 from the other. And he takes a fair share, but yeah, you get him as a spot-up guy. Or even, I mean, he could get that van moving downhill after the ball's already been swung around to him, you know, after somebody else has got the defense off balance. He brings a lot, and there's no need, you know, to murder him because, again, Dell and, you know, should put together a better roster and not have him in this position. But if and when, you know, he could stay on this team and have a much smaller role and just do the two or three things that he's definitely capable of, and then you could hide him on the team's worst, you know, perimeter offensive player on the other end, he's going to be an invaluable reserve.
But, of course, you were saying earlier you didn't think he would go to a bench role.
Yeah, not if you brought in an Eric Bledsoe or, somebody who he thinks he's better than. So that's all Dell's got to do is bring in a top-5 point guard to some.
Right, piece of cake.
I'm making it easy. So, I mean, speaking of the free agent market, just looking across to their team, J.J. Hickson, if Lopez could be moved for something, anything this summer, watching Hickson in this game, what kind of interest would you have in putting him next to Anthony Davis?
I don't know if I'm sold on J.J. Hickson. And that might be a surprise. I mean, I liked what he was doing in that game. I just don't know if he has everything I want in a center. And I'm still not sold on his basketball IQ. I thought he made like a lot of bonehead plays in that game. Defensively, particularly.
Yeah, a couple offensive possessions where he's fallen down in the lane. And yeah,
here's the reason why I hesitate really about J.J. Hickson, and maybe I'm being stupid. So if I'm being stupid, feel free to call me stupid in the comments. The reason why J.J. Hickson has not stuck on any team is because he's been a bonehead every place he goes, And this is his contract year.
Right.
And right now he's in line for a pretty monster payday from probably somebody. I mean, there is no reason why you couldn't expect him to probably, if he got lucky, land a Chris Humphreys kind of deal. So, but I'm not convinced that once he lands that deal, you're going to see the same crazy effort he was putting out in this game. I'm not sure I believe it will happen. So, I'm a little worried about the idea of J.J. Hickson. But if you could get exactly what he gave last night for the Hornets, put that next to Anthony Davis, and you can be guaranteed that's what he's going to be like for the next few years, I would go after J.J. Hickson.
Yeah, that would be a long-armed front-court duo. And again, if he's splitting minutes and you're not asking him to do too much and you still got Ryan Anderson and Jason Smith and it's a four-man rotation, wouldn't be the worst thing to have. But, you know, that would all come down to how much you're paying him because, you know, you wouldn't want to pay him $8, $9 million a year just to be a 22, 25-minute player.
So I want to say something about this game real quick. Because you mentioned Ryan Anderson. He said earlier the reason why I won this game because, of course, Ryan Anderson had a couple great plays. I'm so disappointed in the referees. I don't know why they didn't bail us out when he barreled into Jared Jeffries in that last play. I mean, I have not seen Ryan Anderson attack somebody in the paint like that ever since he's been with the Hornets. I mean, he usually tries to go around the guy and do like a reverse layup. He tries to get around, or he'll like lean off of them and shoot and fade away. He leveled Jared Jeffries in the paint and then put that. I mean, I was like, there's some real Ryan Anderson aggression. It's almost like maybe Jared Jeffries is talking about his wife or his kids or something. I don't know. He put Jeffries into the floor in that game.
How many guys in the league do you think score 6 points in the last 50 seconds in the way that he did in that game? To hit a beautiful wing three and then, you know, to have an aggressive, aggressively go to the basket, put it up and get an and one. I mean, how many guys in the league do you think are versatile enough to score in those two ways in a clutch moment?
I can think of a handful of wing players.
Big, maybe. Okay. Kevin Love is the only big.
Kevin Love. Garnett's not offensive enough to do that anymore. He wouldn't plow anybody into the ground that way. Because he could take a long shot. I don't know if he'd hit a three, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's not a lot of forwards, of big forwards, who would be able to do that at all.
He's
an awesome player. I mean, even though this is kind of a down year as far as his numbers go, I mean, he's pretty much, if you just look at raw, they're pretty similar, but hey, his efficiency is off a little bit, and his offensive rebounding is down from last year where he was amazing. But part of that's the quality of his teammates. But I think Ryan Anderson is like, it would hurt me so bad if he went anywhere.
Don't hurt Ryan.
If Del Dem sends Ryan Anderson somewhere, I'm going to cry.
Yeah, no, I mean, it would be, it's just, again, it's so exciting to see the potential of him next to Davis and then him with, you know, a point guard who can make a multitude of things happen. Like I said, the happiest I've been all week is with, you know, that new set that I saw the Hornets run with him and Davis at the free throw line, and it came right out of a timeout, and it was just a beautiful play, and you could see that that Monty could get really creative with those two guys, and he has when they've been on the court together. And you know, you just look forward to next year. You said we've had 500 and something minutes of Ryan Anderson and Anthony Davis. You just imagine that maybe next year, you know, we get something closer to, I don't know, 2,000 minutes of those two guys together, and how exciting Pelicans basketball could be.
Right. Well, I mean, so we've talked about Ryan Anderson. We haven't said much about Davis, but we haven't talked about the MVP of that game, Darius Miller.
Definitely, I mean, definitely had his moments, was more aggressive.
So here's the stupid thing about this. So I watched that game. I came away from that game feeling really good about Darius Miller. And I've had moments in the past where I've watched, like, he's had, like, a couple minute stretches where his passing is just, it sticks in the mind. His attack and then his pass. He's really good at it. But then when you actually sit down and you look at his numbers, and he played 23 minutes, and he had 8 points, 5 assists, 3 rebounds, 3 of 4 from the field, no steals, no blocks, no turnovers, and a foul. But if you project that over, like, a starter for, like, 34, 36 minutes, you're only talking about a guy who's going to score basically be an 11, 4, and 11 points, 4 rebounds, and, like, 6 assists, 7 assists guy. Now, the assist is really impressive, and last night it did stand out. But the rest of those numbers, they're nothing to write home about. So, I, for some reason, I think it's just the unexpected source of assists. Just like with Gustavo Ayón last year. When it's coming from an unexpected source, it just, like, impacts me so much more than watching it, you know, when Gervais Vasquez has 9 or 10 assists. Or even, you know, when Eric Gordon comes out of game with, like, 5 assists, it's just like, yeah, well, he should be getting that every once in a while. But since Mashburn, the Hornets haven't had a small forward who could pass the ball to save their lives.
Right, and I mean, so you talk about those numbers, and I'll admit that my basketball philosophy is much more conservative than I think a lot of our listeners and just a lot of people in general, but you look at those numbers and project, I look at the fact he played 23 minutes and he had 0 turnovers and 1 foul. So you're talking about just the positive numbers. I look at a guy like Darius Miller and I love him because he's not going to make the negative plays. Like, you know, I'm an old school football guy where I love the teams that run and play defense and have the quarterbacks that don't lose you games. I mean, it's just more my philosophy when it comes to sports, and especially when it comes to role players, is, you know, the role player that doesn't do anything that makes you, you know, bang the table or get furious or why is he in the game and doesn't have any of those mistakes, whether it's on defensive rotations, turnovers, picking up dumb fouls. I mean, you know, I'm watching the Knicks the other day and the other team is in the penalty and the Knicks are going for offensive rebounds and they're fouling guys and they're giving up 2 points 75 feet away from their own basket. Like, where is that ever shown in the stat book? To me, those are the little things that you know, as a coach and just a student of the game, that absolutely drive me insane. And that's, you know, that more as much as the assist, but more than the points or rebounds, is what I love about Darius Miller. Is I can see him as a guy we give 12 to 15 minutes next year, and he'll have a couple of games where he's hitting his threes and they're leaving him open. But more than that, I don't feel like, you know, he's going to come in and lose us any games. So.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you have to have some sort of production from him. And I mean, I don't want to kill that production either, because I mean, wasn't I saying that if we could get, like, a dozen points and 7 rebounds out of Al Farouk every night, I would, you know, be ecstatic about that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Miller was on that kind of pace. And, I mean, I will 100% admit, his passing made me grin like an idiot. I was loving every second of it. And it was just so nice to have the ball be able to swing, reach somebody's hands who was going to do something with it. They weren't just going to jack it up or, if they couldn't get their shot off, throw it back to Gervais Vasquez, and then the whole offense has to reset. If he couldn't get his shot off, he was going to fake, and then he was going to drive.
Yeah.
Though he did pass up some open shots. He needs a little bit more time out there, because there were some shots he should have taken that he didn't.
So do you think this is what we see for the next 18 games? You think Xavier Henry has seen his last you know, minutes as a Hornet, and we get Darius Miller from now on? Or do you think that Monty randomly 3 games from now is going to put Miller back in the doghouse and we'll see the return of Xavier Henry?
I bet we're going to see the return of Xavier Henry.
No!
I think it's crazy. I mean, is there anybody on the team that you are are more certain about what he's that he's not going to give you anything than Xavier Henry?
No, honestly.
I mean, honestly, at this point, I would rather see Terrell Harris out there. And Harris has managed to, what, trip over his own feet a couple times and dribble the ball a few times.
Hey, if you're running Operation Tank, that's what you want.
That's true. So, I mean, we're talking about Operation Tank then. Should we talk about the bazooka, Lance Thomas? Bust in your tank.
Why you got to come in the third quarter and provide so much energy, hustle, and grit against a Portland team that just wanted to get out of there with a easy victory? I don't understand.
LaMarcus, the look on LaMarcus Aldridge's face in the third quarter was priceless going up against Lance Thomas. He wanted no part of him, and he just looked like stunned. He was like, why is this like junkyard dog attached to my leg? he just couldn't figure out what was happening, and he got further and further away from the basket.
Yeah.
He's just like, hey, get him off me. Oh, somebody please.
Yeah,
I was giggling.
I mean, it's 71-67. Portland's fought back in the game, and Lance Thomas with a nice mid-range shot. Then he gets an and-one. All of a sudden, a 5-0 Lance Thomas run, and before you know it, you know, that lead is up to 9, and then Portland has to come back from there. I mean, to me, that was a part of the game where I felt like Portland had all the momentum. They had just tied it a couple minutes earlier. They were going to go into the fourth quarter. As a Hornets fan, you know what's coming. And then, you know, all of a sudden, Lance Thomas gets in the game with 2:06 left, and the Hornets go on a little run there to end the quarter to give themselves some distance. I really felt that, you know, even though the game was technically won at the end, I really feel like that little spurt was the difference in this game.
Yeah. And honestly, I mean, Portland knows it's done. I think that they're checking out a bit too. I mean, normally LaMarcus Aldridge would be able to destroy Lance Thomas, but he just didn't seem interested in it. Did you get the feeling like anybody on the Portland Trailblazers team was giving everything they had other than Eric Maynor?
Wesley Matthews, yeah. I think he's a guy that pretty.
I don't think he was. I honestly don't agree with you with that. In the fourth quarter when his shots was falling, his energy level picked up. But I mean, Grievous Vasquez was just blasting past him. That's why Batum switched over to him, because Wesley Matthews was not trying to stop Vasquez from getting past him.
Well, I don't know if either of their guards are really capable. I mean, I think that might be the team that could challenge us for worst defensive backcourt, honestly. Portland is horrible, but yeah, I mean, they're not far out of it. The way that Utah is playing of late, I mean, going into that game, they're basically two games out of the playoff hunt. If they're checking out now, especially when, quite frankly, the last time they came to New Orleans, they just got utterly embarrassed. I would think that, you know, they weren't checked out for that game. And there were stretches where you saw them kind of turn the light switch on. I mean, in that fourth quarter, I think Damian Lillard finally realized, you know, Grievous Vasquez was standing in front of him and, you know, just went off, you know, on a couple different scoring runs. Wesley Matthews, the same thing. So
got hot. Yeah. Oh, so other than your boy J.J. Hickson, you've mentioned Nick Batum before. I mean, would you want Nick Batum? Do you think Nick Batum is a difference maker? Do you think anybody on that team is a difference maker?
No, and you know, honestly, our announced team was very nice, saying that the future was extremely bright in Portland. I don't know how much I agree with that. They've got a couple of all right pieces, but I don't, you know, I still think it would require quite a bit to get them, you know, into the back end of the playoffs, let alone, you know, being a team that could compete for home court advantage in the West. I don't see anybody on that team that is a perennial all-star. I think Batum might have one season, kind of like how Josh Howard had where, you know, he just has the best season of his career and kind of sneaks in the 12th spot of an all-star team. I think Aldridge is a fringe all-star who's probably falling down the ladder. I mean, when you talk about Anthony Davis making the all-star game, he's probably going to be taking a guy like Aldridge's place. So, you know, we might have seen the last of Aldridge in an all-star game. And I don't know if Lillard ever makes it to an all-star game. I think he'll always be a guy that, you know, falls right on the outside of that conversation. So I don't see this great foundation or really anybody on the team that I would pluck and say, okay, that's a game changer for the Hornets. Now we could start talking about, you know, being a contender with any of these guys.
Yeah, I mean, I was watching that game, especially when LaMarcus Aldridge looked completely beat up by Lance Thomas and didn't want any part of it. I was watching that, and I've never felt like tremendous respect for LaMarcus Aldridge's game. But I would say that LaMarcus Aldridge isn't even as good as Chris Bosh.
Wow.
I mean, Chris Bosh had seasons in Toronto where he was going for 25 and 12.
Right.
And I could never see Aldridge ever approaching those numbers rebounding wise. And maybe he could hit those numbers scoring, but I'm not sure of that. I wouldn't bet on him being much better than a 21 point per game guy. I'm not even looking at his numbers. He's probably passed those already, and I'm looking like an idiot. But I mean, I just don't see him as like a guy who's going to ever be even as good as Chris Bosh. Let's see, his best year, 21.8 points a game. His best rebounding season is 8.8. He's not the force you need in that position. He's good, but if he's going to be on a championship, he's going to need LeBron James next to him.
Right, and that's the comparison I was going to make, is I was going to say he seems to be destined for a Pau Gasol-type career. It's just, does he ever get traded to a team like the Lakers the way Gasol did? I mean, I think Aldridge would be a very nice third piece, you know, on a team that had a dynamic go-to option, you know, like Gasol had with Kobe in L.A., and then maybe put another big guy next to him who, you know, who could be the defensive anchor. Yeah, if you have Aldridge in a similar role to David West when he was with CP3 in the Hornets, or Pau Gasol when he goes from Memphis to L.A., then maybe, you know, maybe that's something that I guess his career will look a little different, but I don't want him as my number one or number two guy if I really want to go somewhere.
All right, so let's stop murdering Portland Trailblazers players because they have a better record than our team does.
Let me ask you one question real quick before we move on. All honesty, I gave you the truth serum. If you were a fairy godmother, you had your little wand, and you could make that last shot at the buzzer go in for Portland. The Hornets get a 1-point loss and closer to more ping pong balls. Totally up to you. Whatever fairy godmother wants, what would you have preferred? Getting this victory or a heartbreaking last second loss by one?
I want the victory. And the only reason why I want this victory is, and 100%, the only reason why I want this victory is because I don't want the story of this game to be Damian Lillard beating the Hornets again.
Who shot the last shot, though?
Wes Matthews took the last shot.
Okay.
But if you don't think that Damian Lillard hitting that shot over Anthony Davis wasn't going to hit every damn SportsCenter recap, I mean, it was going to be an error. And if you, I mean, I don't even know how to say this. There is no way in hell I would ever take Damian Lillard over Anthony Davis as a basketball player in the NBA. And you could give me his, I would not take the Portland Trail Blazers over Anthony Davis.
I agree. Yeah,
and so he's just such a better player. So I don't want. I think that storyline is so. He hit a 3-pointer over Anthony Davis, and therefore he's rookie. I don't care. Anthony Davis dominated that game. He was the best player on the court, and there was no question about it.
Yeah, I don't even think that's debatable. I don't even think the hardest core Portland fan, if they're being honest with themselves, could say that they would, keep Damian Lillard over Anthony Davis. I'm sure all 30 GMs still pick Anthony Davis, and still, everybody thinks he has a brighter future. And, you don't have to say Lillard is horrible in order to say Davis is better. I mean, Lillard, I agree with you. I think he'll be fine. I think he'll have, a solid career throughout. I think in the past I've said, maybe somewhat similar to Terry Porter, who I think was a really good point. I mean, I think if Lillard gets there, that's pretty much his ceiling. And if you go back and look at Lillard's numbers, he was a much better point guard than people remember. But, I think like that, a quasi all-star maybe makes it one or two times. But, yeah, Anthony Davis is far and away the better player. And if he continues at this rate, what we've seen in the evolution of his game, I mean, it could be as early as next year that people are, putting him in that top 10 discussion. And, what I think is interesting about this is if he doesn't win Rookie of the Year, that could leave him open for the Most Improved Player of the Year award next year. So maybe that's just why they're sandbagging his minutes, so he could come out, give 38 minutes next year, put up 22 and 14. Then you'd have to consider him for Rookie for Most Improved Player.
Yes, it's all a secret plan by Dell and Monty. So let me ask you this question. Two games, Memphis and Portland. Was Anthony Davis the best player on the floor in both those games?
I would say only because of the number of things that he could do that Marc Gasol was the best player in the Memphis game. But I would say Anthony Davis was second, and I would say he was the best in the Memphis game. Best in the Portland game. But I still don't think the casual fan appreciates Marc Gasol. I mean, how many, I remember Vlade Divac was really praised for being, a passing center, but it has absolutely nothing on Gasol. I mean, Memphis just has such a luxury to run their offense through the high post with a guy as smart as Gasol and as able as Gasol. I honestly think he's the best center in the NBA right now, currently. And I don't think even if you put Dwight there, I don't agree, but I might give you that. I don't think there's any argument that Gasol's second. And I thought he was just fantastic in that Hornets game. Cause he plays within himself. You were right. When Robin Lopez was on the floor, he became a scorer. When somebody else was on the floor, he became a distributor, and he gives you solid low post defense. He gives better than you would anticipate pick and roll defense. I would say he was the best player in the Memphis game. Davis was second, but Davis was clearly the best in this Portland game.
Yeah. I mean, I agree that Gasol, they might be a 1A, 1B thing for me. I mean, Davis was all over the floor in that game, and his rebounding was crazy. But you're right. Marc Gasol's not, they're right there together, which is, Anthony Davis is a rookie. He's 19. He didn't even turn 20 until what, like a week or two from now?
You turned it today. We're supposed to send it home.
March 11th is his birthday.
What's wrong with you? We're going to sing and everything. I brought a cake for the podcast. Well, I'll let it go this time.
I guess we won't have to sing then. And I'm sure everybody is probably really, really happy. I was playing Star Wars, The Old Republic, and after we beat like a really hard boss we've been trying to kill for a long time, I was singing Staying Alive, and every single person who was in the raid with me yelled at me and told me to never do that again. So, you guys, it's good that I'm not singing Happy Birthday to you.
I feel like I just had a moment that's reminiscent of Billy Madison. I feel like everybody is now nerdier that you haven't told that story. Award you no points. May have God have mercy on this podcast.
It's what I'm here for.
Okay. So anything before we go on to the next two games?
I did want to bring up your post You're missing Peace Post, because I mentioned earlier about acceleration. What I found really interesting about the post was some of those examples really didn't lend themselves to being good examples.
You don't want some Tony Douglas on your team?
I mean, I'm fine with Tony Douglas actually being on the team, because I don't think he's a bad player. But that acceleration is the most important skill in the NBA, and then the two players were given is Tony Douglas and Chris Humphries.
Well, those were the two that were available. Obviously, the ones who topped that chart, LeBron and, you know, Kobe, guys like that, Dwayne Wade, we're not going to be able to get. Those were just the two that kind of topped the ones that would be available. But, yeah, I mean, to think that Chris Humphries led all power forwards in this acceleration category, however they measured it, that's something that might make you want to throw that whole report out the window.
Right. I mean, Chris Humphries, who can't even play for his own team. I wonder what Reggie Evans' acceleration is.
Yeah.
Maybe when he's flopping, his acceleration is really high.
I mean, it would be hard to say what the most important attribute, because then you talk about, what do you mean by important? Does that mean that, you know, it's the one that is least accessible, that, you know, that the fewest people have, so then when guys have it, you know, teams with those skills or players with those skills are at a distinct advantage. But, I mean, you know, when we think about acceleration, and really what he's talking about there is kind of that first step, you know, type of quickness. And intuitively, on at least the offensive end, I think, you know, I guess I would rank basketball IQ up there, but I don't know how you measure that. As far as things that we can now measure, you know, it's why I've been such a fan of Austin Rivers from the start. The fact that you could get by somebody and create that kind of havoc on the opposing team's defense, you know, that's something that really can't be taught, and that's something that as a defense you really can't do anything for. If the guy in front of you is just simply quicker, you know, than you are, it's going to cause a lot of trouble on that end. So I don't know if it's the most important skill, but I definitely would like a couple of guys on this Hornets team that, you know, could change speeds and could accelerate at will.
Right. So the other thing I wanted to mention was your theory number three, which, you know, is elite team zone crunch time, kind of a dumb moment. But you had some people there listed who we could try to get who were good in crunch time. I wanted to actually bring up something. One of the guys we keep talking about a lot in this podcast is Brandon Jennings, because, you know, he's clearly going to be a point guard who's available on the market this summer. He has clearly got a lot of talent. I don't know if he's going to be worth the money we're going to pay him, but one of the things about Brandon Jennings that's extremely alarming is his crunch time stats are dreadful, like 20% shooting dreadful.
Oh, don't think I didn't know that and not throw that in there on purpose. But thanks for bringing it up.
So I expect your missing pieces from now going forward to mention that every time you bring up Brandon Jennings, the guy who can't finish in crunch time.
And again,
and that you do want him desperately to be on this team.
I do, because again, my theory, and I think it's playing out right in front of us, my theory has always been, if Tony Parker went to the Kings, he would not be Tony Parker. You know, I think all these guys that we think are so great aren't that different from the guys who we think are mediocre. They just went to the right situation. I've often said Brandon Jennings hasn't had the guys that have allowed him to play more of a point guard game. He's had to be a scorer because he's had John Salmons next to him his career as the best scorer. Now they add J.J. Redick, they add Gustavo Ayon, they add a little bit of scoring pop. In his last five games, he's putting up 19 points and 13 assists on 48% shooting, 58% from three. We'll see if it continues. I think it will, because I saw his numbers go up when Ilyasova gave him a viable option in the second half of last year playing for a contract. Again, 19 points, 13 assists in the last five games with great shooting numbers. I think it'll continue. And if I have a team with, you know, Anthony Davis, Ryan Anderson, and maybe Eric Gordon on it, to me, that's by far the best team, the best teammates he's ever played with. I think the shot jacking will stop. I think he'll become more of a point guard, which he obviously can be if you look at these numbers. And so I know it's kind of stupid and unfair, and maybe it's a little hypocritical of me, but I almost throw a lot of the numbers from Jennings out the window because I think he's been forced into a role that he simply wouldn't be in here. So just my two cents.
All right. Well, I'll believe it when I see it.
So, I mean, we do have two games this week. I took them last time, so I'm going to let you talk about the Prokhorovich's, the Brooklyn. Sorry, I almost was incorrect there. The Brooklyn Nets.
Yeah, I mean, they came. We played them just recently, so there's not a lot of new stuff we can talk about. I mean. I still can't figure out why they have the record that they have. I can't figure it out. I don't think they're a good team. I think they're kind of a lousy team.
Cool.
And Deron Williams is playing better than he has all season. But, I mean, Brook Lopez is an 18-7 guy. Deron Williams is 17-7. There is no exception. I guess they're just kind of all better than average.
Yeah,
I don't.
I'll make it really simple for you. If you go to the standings and you look above them, they're in this conference called the Eastern Conference, where they are 28-13. They are 9-14 against the West. They are not a good team. They're an average, maybe even a below average team, but they get to play Charlotte and Orlando and Washington and Cleveland and Detroit and Philly and Toronto, you know.
And Milwaukee.
Yeah, 30 times this year.
Right.
So you should go at the minimum 20-10 in those games. And then if you do that, all you've got to do is go 500 against everybody else, and you'll have the record they have. So, yeah, I mean, they are 9-14 against the West. So that tells you, you know, who they really are.
All right. And also, I mean, here's another major point about them. Their point differential, which, again, is a better predictor for playoff success than record is ever, because it tells you actually how quality a team is. They are plus 0.7. So they're barely better than an average team. And again, like you said, they're in the Eastern Conference, which is ridiculously bad.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to go down to the Western Conference sixth team before you're finding the point differentials that are available for the second and third best teams in the Eastern Conference. New York is at plus 4.2. Denver is at plus 4.2, and Denver's in fifth right now. So, I mean, if this was just one giant league and everybody played a more even schedule, you kind of would expect that New York and Indiana would probably be, you know, the sixth and seventh best team in the league.
Yeah, I mean, you take out Miami, New York, and Indiana, and there's not one other team in the East that has a point differential of 1 point per game or more. I mean, it's kind of crazy, and you expect Chicago maybe to get to that next level if and when Derrick Rose comes back. And, I mean, I guess you could make some arguments for Boston the way they've been playing since Rondo left. But, yeah, Brooklyn is you know, if there was an equal schedule where – you know, they had to play every team three times instead of the Eastern Conference teams four and the Western two. You know, this would be a 500 team, plain and simple.
And they're paying how much for that team?
Ugh, I mean, to them, it's to Prokhorov, it's absolutely nothing. But, yeah, it does go to be said that I know we talked about the best contracts in the league in our last peak. Bill Simmons did release the worst contracts in the league, and Joe Johnson was sitting right there at number two. Gerald Wallace was there at number three, and Deron Williams was, I don't remember if he was 15 or 16, but yeah, they had two of the three worst contracts in the league, with only Amare Stoudemire, who again is out with injury, beating those guys out, and then Deron Williams you know, one of the 20 worst contracts. So those are your Brooklyn Nets, folks.
Right. $84 million this season. And next year it goes up to $85 million, and that's, of course, with, like, six players dropping off their books.
Yeah, and Chris Humphries is getting paid $12 million a year, and he was just told he's no longer in the rotation. Like, what?
wouldn't it be nice? Wait, our team actually kind of is doing that with Rashard Lewis, but whatever. Yeah, I mean, and if you go down, I mean, if you want, if we're going to talk about this team, I think the thing that we have to focus on is their defense is really bad. I think that if the Hornets could actually, the Hornets, one thing they're not so bad at is their offense. So if they can get rolling on offense, they can beat this team without too much trouble. I don't think you want them to beat the team, but I mean, they allow 50% effective field goal shooting. They only get turnovers on 13% of their possessions. And those are pretty poor numbers. They don't foul. That's what the one thing they have going for them is they are the lowest team in the league at giving up free throws. But, you know, the Hornets don't really earn free throws anyway, so that doesn't impact them at all, right?
Yeah. I do want to give Brooklyn a little bit of props. You know, it's pretty sad over here in the McNamara household. I'll admit it. I'm watching League Pass, and I'm just watching the worst teams because obviously I got to watch all the teams that I'm pulling for so the Hornets could get more ping pong balls. And I had to watch some Brooklyn Philadelphia tonight. So Philadelphia actually won, which, you know, helps the Hornets out because the Hornets were closing in on Philly in the ping pong race. But Brooklyn did not look good in this game at all. Comes back home, obviously, on the second night of a back-to-back. So it'll be interesting to see how that affects them if they're embarrassed from that Philly loss and come out and take it out on the Hornets, or if they're in somewhat of a spiral. I mean, they're only 5-5 in their last 10. They're not playing that well. Darren Williams had that amazing it was really just an amazing half against Washington where he was lights out. But other than that, there hasn't really been, you know, much going on with this team. They simply beat us because they're two quasi-stars, Darren Williams and Brooke Lopez, you know, were the two best players probably on the court that night, and kind of held on to a victory down the stretch against the Hornets. I could honestly see this one going either way.
Right, so prediction for the game. I think Brooklyn's going to win by 6. I don't want to take them because I hate them, but I'm going to take them because I think they'll manage to eke out another win. You going to take Brooklyn or are you going to take the Hornets?
I actually think that Davis and Anderson have a monster game here, both guys, and kind of keep the Hornets in it. I think this comes down to Joe Johnson versus Eric Gordon, actually, which one of the overpaid guys, number 2 and number 4 on Bill Simmons' list, actually give the best game. We saw Eric Gordon outplayed last time by C.J. Watson, so I don't know why Joe Johnson doesn't do the same thing. So yeah, I'll say Brooklyn by 5.
See, again, you're just making all the same picks I am.
I know.
So I can never catch up.
Edging into the lead. Well, let's see if we agree on this next one. So Washington has actually been about a 500 team since John Wall got back. Wall isn't playing, terrific by any means, not putting up numbers that, you know, you would expect from the number one overall pick and a guy that, you know, was being talked about basically becoming what Kyrie Irving has become. Wall's just an average point guard. Got a PER of about 16, putting up, you know, some solid numbers, but not really able to knock down the mid-range jumper. Definitely not a three-point shooter by any means. So it's kind of odd that since he came back, they're a 500 team, but I think just kind of added some steadiness to the team. Also, Bradley Beal started playing a lot better when they kind of had that consistent guy at point guard, and Martell Webster. I mean, if you look at their five-man lineups, they really have a nice lineup when they put out Wall, Bradley Beal and Webster to kind of space, and then Okafor and Nene down low. I mean, that's a solid five, and this was a team that was just at the bottom of the league about 6 weeks ago, but have been playing 500 ball since, and is actually not a horrible team anymore. They play really good defense. They hold teams to low percentages, and they grab rebounds at a high rate. If they just had an average offense, this could be a 500 team. I mean, they're fifth in defensive rating, but they're 30th in offensive rating. This is a team that a lot of people laugh at, and they're laughing stocks of the league. But they're another fifth in defensive rating. I wouldn't call them a top five defensive team, but I would definitely say they're in the top 10. So really, if they get any offense at all, they're a dangerous team.
Right. So yeah, they're like you said, they're fifth so far this year. But I think I remember reading a thing from Kevin Pelton where since Wall came back, they're second. They've been second in the league since then.
Yeah.
So, and it makes sense. John Wall, his one undeniable talent is just his quickness. And quickness defensively at the point of attack he's replacing A.J. Price at point guard. I mean, they didn't have anybody. Gennaro Pargo was there for a little while. They had nobody at point guard who you would consider a real defensive player. Garrett Temple's not that. So having a actual physical, big, quick point guard come in, even if that point guard can't shoot a lick, it's going to help you. So, and he's doing 14-7. Like you said, this isn't like superstar territory. But he's a fine player, and if he's giving you a lot defensively, doesn't that make him at least good?
Yeah, it's like that what we kind of said when Eric Gordon came back, you're going from absolutely awful to average, and that's going to make a huge difference. And like Gordon, Wall isn't playing to, his capabilities right now because, still getting back into shape and still a little rusty. Again, like I said, especially on his jumper. I mean, that thing is absolutely awful this season, but it's an upgrade from what they had before, and that defense is good enough to where, this is going to be an ugly, ugly game most likely. And if Washington gets two or three guys going in this game, it's probably going to be pretty hard for the Hornets to win. But the question is whether or not they will be able to get anybody going.
Yeah. So I do have to say something here. During the draft, I was not high on Bradley Beal at all. His numbers didn't scream anything useful to me. And supposedly he was a great shooter, but his shooting numbers in college were really bad. But for the past 2 months of the season, guy's been a monster. I mean, he's been really, really good. And if you look down his points totals, I mean, he's basically been putting up the numbers we were hoping Eric Gordon would be putting up for us.
Right.
So, I was wrong. You were right.
Yeah, I mean, there was supposedly there was two guys that Oklahoma City really wanted when they were deciding to move Harden, Klay Thompson and Bradley Beal. And, I trust their evaluators. But, yeah, Beal was, again, he was on a Florida team. I just happened to watch a lot of Florida basketball, and he was just on the wrong team, really, with some guards that were and are still absolute chuckers. And it was tough for him to be able to shine there. So I like the guy. I still think you're right in some ways that he's not really going to give you much else throughout his career. I mean, I think a lot of people said Ray Allen, but, Ray Allen in his prime rebounded and he got assists and, definitely later in his career, he became a really intelligent and quasi lockdown defender. I don't think Beal ever gives you that, but I think he's definitely a guy that'll put up multiple 20-point per game seasons. Maybe Mitch Richmond would be more of a comparison.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, so right over the last 2 months, I mean, he's only had, you know, eight games where he scored less points than number of shots taken.
Yeah.
So, and I mean, he's got games of 28, 29, 21, 20, 25, 22, 26. I mean, he's been pretty impressive. So, I don't know. In this game, the Hornets are going to lose this game.
Wow. So confident in that.
Yeah, I think they're going to lose this game. I think, I don't know. I have a feeling that the Hornets, when they run up against a really strong defense with guards that are capable of covering Gravis Vasquez, our offense grinds to a halt. And the Hornets, like I said, the one thing they have going for them is an average offense. When an average offense meets great defense, average offense goes to hell. And we can't rely on our defense to do anything against this team. I mean, they might be the worst offense in the league, but we're the second worst defense. So if it comes to extremes, when you're looking at the best defense versus a mediocre offense and the worst offense versus one of the worst possible defenses, I take the team that's at least got a good defense.
Nene and Emeka Okafor, who do you put? Again, I want Anthony Davis out there, and I want Ryan Anderson out there. If you listen to my wishes, which one do you put Anthony Davis on? Which one do you put Ryan Anderson on?
I put Anthony Davis on Emeka Okafor.
Okay.
I mean, I don't think Emeka Okafor is going to – I don't think either of these guys are going to chase Ryan Anderson out to the three-point line.
Uh-huh.
But I think Nene has more agility than Emeka Okafor does. And Anthony Davis will be able to work around Okafor way easier than he'll be able to work around Nene Hilario.
Yeah. Yeah, to me, this is the perfect game to try that out and go with it. I think this is a matchup that screams for – Monty to be a little bit more aggressive, put the onus on the other team to adjust to you. I would love to see Ryan Anderson and Davis at the 4 and 5 in this game, because while Nene maybe could provide a little bit of trouble for those guys in the low post, and I'm not even so sure about that, I just can't imagine how Washington tries to adjust and plays Anthony Davis and Ryan Anderson on the other side.
All right. So let me ask you one last question about Washington before we stop talking about this game.
Would I trade our first-round pick for Trevor Ariza? Yes.
Well, it was about Trevor Ariza. On a scale of 1 to 10, how shocked are you that when Trevor Ariza got injured and Martell Webster took his minutes and his starting role, that this team went on a roll?
I mean, is there anything more than 100%?
You're 100% shocked?
I mean, I'm 100% shocked, I guess, that it took this long to get there. I mean, I saw an interview again, Zach Lowe, who I think does, some terrific work, did an interview with John Wall just recently. And, John Wall was really nice when, asked about Trevor Ariza's poor shooting and whether or not, Webster has helped spacing out the team that, has some spacing issues. And, Wall just said that Ariza's a defensive player and, any points that he scores or shots that he hits is icing on the cake. I'll just say that that cake is very dry. I agree. It is icing on the cake, but there's never any on it. So yeah, I'm 100% shocked it took Washington this long. I'm still shocked that they made the trade with the Hornets in the first place. I mean, it just they still gonna have those guys going into next year. Not much flexibility. It's I guess it always gives me hope that there will be some team around the corner to bail us out if we do make another poor choice in the future. But I hope Trevor Ariza gets in this game and takes as many shots as his heart desires.
They could always hope that Jan Vesely suddenly explodes.
Like, as a human being?
Like, no, suddenly he becomes like a monster. He was taken, what, 6th overall?
Yeah.
He's averaging 2.6 points per game and 2.3 fouls per game.
Known for kissing his girl at the draft. I mean, does it change your mind if we luck out and miss Bradley Beal here? Because he didn't play in their last game. He's questionable tomorrow night in the epic tank versus tank game as Washington goes against the Kyrie Irving-less Cleveland Cavaliers. I mean, there's a chance that Bradley Beal doesn't play in this game. Would that change your prediction at all?
Yes.
Okay.
Hornets would win in that case.
All right.
So, but here's the thing. I mean, I think we can lock in two teams as the Hornets can't catch. There's no way the Hornets are going to beat out Orlando and Charlotte for most ping pong balls. Not a chance. But if you just look at games lost, and that's George Karl always put, he says whenever he looked at standings, he never looked at wins. He always looked at losses because those are games you can't get back. So we have to look at the loss column whenever we look at standings and celebrate the number of games that the Hornets can't get back. These are the ones that they've well and truly screwed. So as if you look at it that way, the Hornets are tied for fourth in the league. Sacramento beats them, and they're tied with Cleveland. So we got to really hope. I mean, Washington actually has one less loss than we do. So we got to lose to this team.
Yeah, I mean,
gotta.
To me, I'm most concerned about Cleveland. I know we wrote off Sacramento a while
Cleveland
ago.
Cleveland is a hard tank.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to be without Kyrie, although I have seen them play two very good games without Kyrie Irving, which is kind of surprising. They actually beat somebody a couple of weeks ago. I want to say, gosh, I don't remember what the game is. I'm sure one of our listeners will put it in the comments. But yeah, that's the team. I agree. I don't think they could catch Charlotte or Orlando, but I think if the Hornets finish with 26 wins, which is about what I expect. Again, I don't see. I look at this schedule, and the only game I see the Hornets favored in for the rest of the year is March 31st at home against Cleveland. That is honestly the only game I really think will be favored in. So, you know, even if you assume that they win three games, they're not favored in along with that Cleveland game. That's at about 26. I would guess that, you know, Cleveland is the only team other than those two that you mentioned that I could see winning less than that. Sacramento actually plays well at home. Phoenix has been scrappy as of late. Minnesota I'm kind of worried about too, but I keep holding out hope that Kevin Love is coming back and that pushes them over. But, yeah, I mean, it's going to fall somewhere between 3 and 6 or 7 most likely. But a 3 or 4 game win streak puts us in jeopardy of having the 10th or 11th pick, to be honest.
Yes. Just like last year, I mean, we have a lot of chances for this tank to hit us the wrong way.
Yeah, I mean, I really think that that Ryan Anderson needs to have a mysterious illness or something. But, yeah, and when I look at the prospects, again, we'll talk about it, but there's definitely tier fall-offs that I would not be comfortable going below. I mean, maybe we'll get lucky and some wing guys will get pushed back because, you know, people always reach for bigs. And although I wouldn't really have any interest in Cody Zeller or Alex Len, maybe somebody drafting ahead of us might, and that might push a wing back. But I really want to be in that top 6 at the worst. And I would prefer to be, you know, somewhere between 3 or 5 in this draft. So.
Yeah, 3 to 5. I mean, it's, I think everybody know, who's listening to this knows. Otto Porter is my man.
Yeah.
Porter,
Oladipo, Burke, or Smart. or not Burke, Porter Oladipo, Shabazz, Smart, or McLemore. Very happy with any of those five. I expect Noel to go up high too, so that's why I say I got to be in that top six in this draft.
Right. All right, so got anything else to chat about?
That's about it. Just looking forward to watching a lot of bad basketball over the next month or so as I root for all these other teams. I mean, it's really hard becoming like an adopted fan of Detroit and Phoenix. Like, I have to be tonight. Got to go pull after this podcast for Phoenix to keep their lead over Denver and root for a Detroit comeback. So it's just watching a lot of bad basketball, but it's always fun to do at this point in time, because then when you watch playoff basketball, you really see the difference, and it's a little bit of a reality check.
Right. And I know you also need to rush off so you can go watch The Bachelor and see who that rose goes to.
Well, it's not the rose as much as after the final rose. That's where the drama comes out. Chris Harrison holds it down like the man he is. But I would suggest that you go check out Little Miss Sunshine this weekend and come back to us and let us know what you thought.
I will do that. So thanks, everybody, for listening to In the Know and for a report on Little Miss Sunshine. Come back to us later in the week.
Nice.
Party town, ain't nothing but a ball.